welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. On this week's episode, we're talking a little Texas A&M and LSU to round out the season, and we have Ross Dellinger from The Advocate down in Baton Rouge to give us a little look at the LSU Tigers. We also have former Texas A&M quarterback Gerard Johnson on to see what he sees in this Texas A&M team this year in the quarterback play, as well as talk to us about some of the work he's doing down in Houston with some young quarterbacks. And we have the picks, the college football picks for this week. So let's get right underway, and I'm going to toss it to this guy in the Mr. Rogers sweater across the counter from me. It's Mr. Zach Taylor.
Well, you know, they're doing all kinds of different things here in the building, and with that, the air conditioning has been a little off at times. And so, it's pretty chilly in here. At least I think it is. It's colder in here than it is outside, which isn't saying much.
No.
Even though we did get a little bit of a taste of some fall weather a couple
it
days ago.
It was so nice.
And then it went bye-bye.
So the air conditioning at our apartment is a little, you know, on the fritz and has been for the past couple weeks. But we thought, you know, it's getting cool. We can take our time with getting it fixed and everything. And it was so nice to just be so cool out. So you can just keep all the air conditioning heat off, just get a good sweatsuit on and just kind of relax, and then it got hot again, and that's not fun. It's Thanksgiving. This is when you need to be bundled up and playing football outside.
It would be like whenever my sophomore year when my roommates opened my window, and I didn't know about it because I had blinds on the front, so I went all winter long with my window open wondering, why in the hell is it so cold in here?
You should be trained for this then. Your body should be ready for this.
I'm ready, and I watched Everest last night, which, by the way, is a freaky movie. I'd never seen that before.
Yeah. Hey. Quick note on that. I started Designated Survivor last night.
Yeah?
The TV show. That is a really good TV show.
Is it really?
Really good TV show.
I like Naked and Afraid. I'm a Naked and Afraid kind of guy. So.
Well, that is very counter to your feelings right
yeah,
now.
Well, we are doing a Periscope today. If we were just doing the podcast, I would take my clothes
off. We were normally Naked and Afraid when we do the podcast. So anyway, well, that's a whole other story.
Some behind-the-scenes stuff.
Whole other day. But we have... Well, what was once a really huge matchup for Texas A&M and LSU coming up this weekend, but kind of after that, you know, whole college football playoff rankings came out last night, lost its luster a little bit. Both Texas A&M and LSU fall out of the college football playoff rankings.
You know, I'm done trying to figure out what this college football playoff committee is trying to do, because apparently someone there really loved Texas A&M, and all of a sudden they just were real down on them. And I guess it has to do with Trevor Knight. I don't know. I mean, you look at it, even after that Mississippi State loss, they went from 4th to 8th. And then after they had lost to Ole Miss by 1 point, and look, let's give Ole Miss credit. They do have some talented guys on that team. A&M should have won that. They should have won it big time.
Sure.
But Ole Miss
does
have
talented guys on the offensive side of the ball.
Right. They have some talented guys on the offensive side of the ball. A&M played terrible, but they only lost by 1 point. Albeit it was against a team that has struggled and was without their best player, Chad Kelly. So A&M went from 8th to 25th. And then I wouldn't say they struggled. They look like they struggled at times. Maybe I'll take that back. Yeah. Struggle would be a word against UTSA. The offense, anyways, did. And so then you end up being completely out of the top 25, and LSU was, what, one move away? When you look at that play, that last play, if Geis had gone the right direction, then that's probably a touchdown. LSU wins that. They defeat the SEC East champs, Florida. It's one of those deals. You look at a couple of different things that they've gone here or there. Of course, you can always say that about every season, but it's still a big game, no doubt, here in College Station and in Baton Rouge.
Sure. I mean, there's still plenty on the line as far as postseason play goes. I just think that because both of those teams fell out of the rankings, there's not going to be that slingshot effect for either of them if they win to try to get back up into that Sugar Bowl picture. Sugar Bowl is not going to happen.
See, you say that, though, but with this football this committee, I'm not so sure. Because when you look at the way that they have done things, A&M dropped, 17 spots after that loss to Ole Miss?
So. It was from 8 to 25.
You got Tennessee is ranked 17th. Auburn is ranked 13th. Texas A&M beat Auburn in a head-to-head matchup. They're likely to lose big time to Alabama. If A&M pulls off a win tomorrow, then they will be the second-best team in the SEC West. And granted, they haven't played LSU, but A&M will be the second-best team in the SEC West behind Alabama. and 9-3.
Sure. I just don't think that they're going to get ahead of Tennessee, who's at 17. I mean,
well, that's what I'm saying. You can't, you cannot figure these people out. The committee, you can't figure out because, and frankly, I think they do a lot of it to set up good matchups. When you look at Auburn, I think it looks a lot sexier when you've got Auburn at 13 and Alabama at 1 rather than Auburn being 20th or whatever. So
yeah, it makes sense. I think A&M, if they win on Thursday, jumping back into a spot to be able to go to the Sugar Bowl would be like reverse what happened to TCU 2 years ago, being number 3 in the penultimate rankings and then falling to 6 in the final rankings. Everyone was kind of like, wait, what? Why were they number 3? I think A&M making that jump all the way, they'd have to jump almost all the way, I would think, to probably, where is Auburn? Auburn is 13. They'd have to jump to 13. At least 15
Auburn
or 14.
Auburn is 13, but if A&M does defeat LSU, A&M will be 9-3, Auburn 8-4.
It's true. That's true.
With the head-to-head matchup going to Texas A&M.
But if they lose to, if they give Alabama a good run for it, or even just if they lose by less than A&M does, I think that could be justification to because
it may, but there's going to be a lot of folks, not just in College Station, that I think would take issue.
And
with
what
that.
you have to remember too is the head to head, the conference champion, those buzzwords, talking points that people like to bring up a lot, people assume that the playoff committee looks for. Those are actually just things in tiebreakers when you're you know. Just it's so such a fine line between two teams, and you don't know. That's the stuff that you look at. Right now, there's no tiebreaker between A&M and Auburn, and I don't know how much this LSU win will, if that will get them within two or three spots of Auburn, that they need to kind of go through it with a fine-tuned comb like that. If by the eye test, which is kind of I think what they're going on, shows that A&M and Auburn are not anywhere close according to the committee. The whole head-to-head, things like that, just don't come into play.
See, and I don't understand that whatsoever. And that's why I can't figure out this committee out. Because when you look at that, ultimately, if Auburn loses, no matter what they lose by to Alabama, and Texas A&M defeats LSU, then A&M would have the better record, and they would have the exact same record, 5-3 in the SEC West, or the SEC, with A&M beating Auburn at home. Granted, that was a long time ago at the beginning of the year, but how Auburn could still be ranked higher than Texas A&M if the Aggies pull off a win against LSU, I really don't understand that. But again, I don't understand this playoff committee. And initially, you know, we had talked about A&M being ranked 4th in that first poll. I didn't get that either. And I didn't get them being ranked 8th after Mississippi State. I think they probably should have started off around 8, and then after they lost to Mississippi State, dropped to 16, 17, something like that. And the AP poll right now has the Aggies at 22nd, which I think is where they should be. I don't think that they should be higher than that. I really don't think that they should be much lower than that. But to have an 8-3 team, and then you've got all these other ones, USC, look, I realize USC has turned a corner, okay? They're not the same team that played Bama in that game one. Mm-hmm. But that, again, though, but you look at a lot of the players, and they've got a lot of the same guys, and they were trounced by Alabama in that week one.
Right, right.
Bad.
Right. Something to consider is the fact that, or just to think about, I don't know how, if it necessarily has any effect on anything. This is the first year that there's been some rollover in the committee, that you have a new chairman, you have a few new representatives in there, and so it seems like in some ways they could be doing things a little bit differently, so that's definitely something to consider. For me, I think that how everything is set up, even with a win, I mean, maybe a just absolute routing by A&M might bring them up, but I just don't see the Sugar Bowl still being in play with that. But before we even talk about bowls and everything like that, there is a game to play this weekend. And Zach, kind of, what are your keys to this big game for between the Aggies and the Tigers?
Quarterback play. I think that's what it's going to come down to, because when you look at LSU, look, Leonard Fournette and Geist are going to get their yards, and probably more Geist than Fournette, because I imagine he's still pretty hampered by that injury. But I think Geist is going to get his yards. He'll get 150, maybe even 200 yards. So A&M, it's going to be more contained than anything else. I think it's going to be a low-scoring affair, but it's all going to come down to, can Jake Hubenek perform against this tough LSU defense, And can Danny Etling be a quarterback that can lead LSU to a victory? Because he's looked pretty rough at times this year, but frankly, I think he's probably the best chance that they have. So I think that's really what it's going to come down to, which one of these quarterbacks performs better. Because I think Texas A&M, while I think LSU's defense is much better than Texas A&M's defense, when you look at it, the offensive sides of the ball are somewhat similar. But I think Hubenek overall has a better arm than Etling. I think it's just going to come down to which one of the quarterbacks can show up when they're needed the most.
Right, right. For me, it's the battle in the trenches. I think the offensive line for Texas A&M has been absolutely abysmal through this little skid that they've gone through. And I think maybe the injury to Connor Lanphier was more telling than we maybe thought it was, because I think there's a huge continuity problem with the offensive line. And frankly, I don't necessarily think that you can say that Trevor Knight's play himself is something that's being missed so much to the offense, because Jake Hubenek has done a great job moving the ball through the air. But I think that Trevor Knight's ability to run that read option has definitely helped mask some of the holes and some of the problems that the offensive line had, so that they didn't really stick out until Trevor Knight was out of there.
And I think Noel Mazzoni has admitted to that. He said, look, we were getting away with things earlier on in the year that we're not getting away with right now. And I think the offensive line is a big key point on that.
Sure, sure. So I think the offensive line, and I think the defensive line has got to step up and play better. Other than Myles Garrett, of course, had a pretty career-type performance against UTSA last week. But other than Myles Garrett and Daylon Mack popping up there every once in a while, I don't think that if they play like they did against UTSA, LSU is going to run all over them. Now, it's easy to go back and look at the stats in that game and say, well, UTSA only had 40-something rushing yards in the game. Well, yeah, but that's UTSA, and you can get away with not great play on the defensive line and still perform against a team like that. But I think with LSU, with this just great running attack and great offensive line, you're going to struggle if you play that same way. So the battle in the trenches is going to be huge. Whoever can how the offensive line and defensive line goes for Texas A&M is how the team is going to go in this game.
No, and I think you can say that about every team. You know, when you're looking at it, I think that's two of the most important spots, because as your offensive line and defensive line go, that's generally how the offense and defense go. When you're looking at A&M's defense, it's been a very much bend but don't break mentality this year. They are averaging, I think, 21.1 points per game, which is, I think, 21st in the nation, somewhere around in there, the low 20s. But then total defense, they're around 80-something in yards given up per game. And so when you're talking about that, A&M has relied very heavily on turnovers. A&M has relied very heavily on good red zone defense. And that's going to be the same thing that they're going to need again this week. I mean, they're going to be giving up some yards. They're going to be giving yards up to guys and Fournette. I have no doubt about that. They're going to get their day. But can A&M contain it? Can they stop Danny Etling from making throws that, say, Shea Patterson was making, the secondary? And I'll tell you a big thing, and something that really sticks out to me in this game, is that Priest Willis got playing time last week. And they need him, because Deshaun Capersmith has been abysmal at corner. And it's easy to pick on a guy, because I realize sometimes things will be out of place, and so one guy ends up looking like he's the one that made the mistake when really it was somebody else. But I think Deshaun Capersmith, it's pretty obvious that he has blown some coverages at times this year. And I think a lot of that's youth. Some of it's coaching. I mean, and I think John Chavis would be the first to say that. And A&M is really, really wanting Priest Willis back at corner, and they need him to play some significant time this week.
Right, right. And to close this out, I want to dispel two talking points that I've heard when we do our Periscopes and our Facebook Live videos and all that stuff that people want to bring in here. Well, three. First, Kevin Sumlin is not going to be fired. I think regardless win or lose this game, Kevin Sumlin is not going to be fired. Because who else is out there? Tom Herman's going to go to Texas. Who else is out there you don't fire Kevin Sumlin this year. Two, a lot of people when talking about Kevin Sumlin and his job security and what they say, like, hey, this is the SEC, this is the best conference in the nation. You have to have better coaching here in the SEC. This year, the SEC is not the best conference in the nation. The Big Ten is the best conference in the nation. The SEC is down this year, whether you want to like it or not. Look at some of the teams. Look at how things are shaping up in the rankings. The Big Ten is the best conference in the league this year. And three, Trevor Knight's injury did not cause this skid, this losing skid, and kind of the ineptity of the offense that has completely to do with the offensive line and the offensive play calling in the second half. So when people are popping in here and wanting to comment and bringing those things, I say no to all of those things.
We got salty Travis today.
Because those three things are not fat. The only one that you might be able to debate me on is the job security of Kevin Sumlin, which I think some people have some back and forth opinions on that. But no, the SEC is not the best conference in the nation this year. That is the Big Ten. And no, Trevor Knight's injury did not cause this whole skid, and having Trevor Knight back will fix everything. No. I think when you go into the bowl game, if Trevor Knight is healthy, you run a two-quarterback system. You let Jake Kubiak run the offense from 20 to 20, and then if you have third-down situations, short-running situations, want to mix it up, or goal-line situations, you bring Trevor Knight in, kind of like the Belldozer package or the Tyrone Swoops package, and let him do that kind of situation, because that's where he's excelled. Jake Kubiak is actually able to get the ball close and into the red zone.
Thoughts? I didn't know if you were just on your soapbox. Wanted to drop the mic and go.
I figured I'd let you, you know.
Okay, so your first point was what? The offensive line?
No, Sumlin.
Sumlin's job security. Obviously, a lot of fans around here have been very frustrated, especially with the second late season collapse. Not second collapse. This is the third straight year that that's happened. When you look at Kevin Sumlin, and I'll agree with you on this, Travis, I don't think that there's a better option out there right now. I think Tom Herman is already in Texas's pocket. I think he's going to be in Austin, as much as the other talk has been around getting maybe less miles. I think Tom Herman is going to be heading to Austin. I other than, say, picking out or sniping off another coach from somewhere, Chris Peterson, who has a relationship with Scott Woodard, who hired him there, I don't see Texas A&M doing anything as far as offseason goes. And you also look at Kevin Sumlin's recruiting and the things that he's done. You could say, well, he's getting paid too much to go 8-4. That's not Kevin Sumlin's fault. That's the administration's fault for giving him that much money after one good season. And that was a boo-boo on Texas A&M's part. You can't fault Kevin Sumlin for that. So don't hate the player, hate the game. I agree with you. Kevin Sumlin's not going to be going anywhere. What was the second one?
Second point was that the SEC is not the best conference in the nation this year. It is the Big Ten. I mean, look at Alabama. Other than USC, who seems to kind of be the sexy pick as of late by a lot of the national analysts and whatnot, Alabama's best wins this year, Texas A&M, which I think we'll all agree is not necessarily a great pick. And the other team that fell out of the rankings, that's LSU.
Well, but you're also basing it on the college football playoff rankings, which could very easily look completely different this time next week.
But I don't
week.
Think you disagree that both of those teams should probably not be ranked this week. If not 25 or...
I think A&M should be ranked, but I think it's 22nd, 23rd, something like that.
Sure.
LSU might be 25th. That's what they are on the AP poll.
That's not the same SEC in the years past when you have teams that are staying between 10 and 20, battling it out with each other and staying in that realm. There's a lot of disparity between Alabama and all the rest.
Well, yeah, I'll agree with you in that, but you also have to look at non-conference, because that's really what you have to go by. And so, as far as strength of conference goes, you have to say, well, what was their non-conference? Of course, we had a lot of big games that were early on between teams that were good and teams that aren't. Now, you talk about as far as good wins for Alabama, remember USC? USC's ranked 12th right now.
Right,
and
right.
They just pummeled USC.
Right.
So that's a good win for Alabama. Ohio State, their only losses come in conference to Penn State. I'm not for sure who Penn State beat in non-conference. Who did Ohio State play? Because, I mean, we're going way, way back.
Yeah.
And teams have changed a lot since then. I will agree with you that the Big Ten is very, very good. I think I'll agree with you on that. You know, I will. It's not flashy. I don't think that there's a flashy team other than Ohio State. Because Michigan doesn't have that flash. They're a grounded out, pounded out kind of team. Jim Harbaugh provides that, but for on-field standpoint, they're not flashy. So, yeah, I'll agree with you on that. But you also look and you see a lot of these teams, you know, I think the Big 12, for everything that they have, I think they probably end up having more top 25 teams or as many as the SEC does right now. So I don't like looking at the rankings and saying, well, this team is better or this conference is better. I think the SEC is still very strong. But, yeah, I'll agree with you. I think the Big Ten might be better this year. But we'll see, because no doubt some of these teams at the top end of either conference are going to be playing each other.
Sure.
And the last one was don't blame Trevor Knight. Obviously, he provides something to the offense that Jake Kubenek can't, and that's being able to use his legs. I said before the Ole Miss game that I thought that they should play it conservative with Jake Kubenek. I thought that, you know, you got a new quarterback in. Ole Miss has been terrible against the run. You should be conservative with Jake Kubenek. But I'm completely changing my tune after that game against Ole Miss. Ole Miss, as you were talking about, the offensive line, I think, is a big part of this. A&M couldn't run against Ole Miss that well. And you saw that, especially in the fourth quarter. Noel Mazzone, Kevin Sumlin and company tried to play it conservative, and it ended up coming back to bite them. And so I think now you got Jake Kubenek, who I think is a better passer than Trevor Knight. I think a lot of people think that. He's got a much better ball anyways. I think you let him air it out. Throw it 40 to 45 times.
And I think that plays into what they were doing, bringing Trevor Knight in to talk about his injury. Maybe he could come back for LSU and telling everyone about this injury that Jake Kubenek had, which kind of goes well away from what they normally do in press conferences. I think it was a little bit of gamesmanship. Yeah. I think it's a little bit of, I don't know if we're going to be able to throw the ball as well or air it out because we have all these injuries to quarterbacks. Oh, wait, we can. We're just, you know, messing with you.
Just jacking with our heads.
Just
we're messing
playing with
our minds.
Well, that was a very, very, very long, good segment on everything that we have to talk about Texas A&M and LSU. But next, we're going to bring in a guy that knows even more about LSU than we even possibly could, and that's Ross Dellinger from The Advocate in Baton Rouge, next on the My Aggie Nation podcast.
Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Zach Taylor alongside Travis L. Brown. And joining us on the line is the man, the myth, the legend, Ross Dellinger of The Advocate. And Ross, you're always a good Twitter follower. I know you're always keeping up with everything that is going down in Baton Rouge. Obviously, a big game coming up between the LSU Tigers and Texas A&M Aggies tomorrow night. Are folks in Baton Rouge pretty confident about this game? Because, boy, people here in College Station are just running for the hills with their hair on fire, thinking that A&M is just going to get walloped by LSU.
Well, great. It's kind of the same in both cities. Because, they're kind of feeling the same way here. Just because of the injury situation, LSU's whole offensive line pretty much is completely banged up. And of course, running back Leonard Fournette, I would be shocked, you know, if he played in the game. He's been battling that ankle injury. So they're a beaten and banged up bunch, and they're pretty down after a home loss to Florida, you know, and now what are they playing for, you know? So they don't feel real confident over here.
Definitely. It's interesting to hear about the offensive line being kind of banged and bruised. Is that something that happened prior to the Florida game or in the Florida game? How long has that kind of taken shape, and how long has the backups and whatnot been able to get in there and get experience to try to find some continuity?
Oh, it's been that way, honestly, since preseason camp. Some of them, others were hurt. One specifically, LSU starting left guard Will Clapp was pretty much hurt in the season opener and has played with an injury all year. Each one of them has something that they've been banged up with for multiple games and have played with. And LSU just didn't have the confidence, I guess, to put in the backups. And they're playing with a lot of injured starters. And you can tell, especially at tackle. You know, LSU's core of its offensive line, although a couple of them, like I said, Will Clapp, are real banged up. It's one of the better, I think, in college football, with Ethan Posick at center and then Clapp at guard and Josh Booty at the other guard. But the tackles have been interesting. In fact, LSU has, because of the injuries and because, I think, of the struggles at tackle, both tackles, LSU has rotated their tackles like you would a running back or a receiver in a game. It's been really bizarre to see. But every other series, LSU is, you know, putting in kind of a different tackle. So they've just been, it's just a fluid situation. It's a long-standing situation on the line. They're just banged up and struggling, especially on the outside.
Well, it's kind of crazy when you look at that, and then you see a guy like Darius Geis, who is really just coming to his own, I think, over these past few games. A talented guy that a lot of people, I'm sure, down there in Baton Rouge knew. But, I mean, coming in, you talked about the injuries to Leonard Fournette, but Geis really hasn't seemed to miss a beat, even with a banged-up offensive line.
Right, yeah. He is something else. You know, everybody talks, obviously, about Leonard Fournette. He overshadows, you know, a guy that might be starting on any other team. He's kind of a different back. Darius is a little shorter. You know, he's not necessarily going to completely run over somebody like Leonard is, but man, he can definitely, his cuts and his stopping, you know, how he can stop running full speed in cut is just amazing. And his speed in general is pretty dang good. He can outrun some defensive backs, and he's a strong guy. He had a little mental lapse last week, and so mentally, psyche, I don't know where it is, because he went the wrong way on a fourth and goal, the last play of the game, at the 1 yard line. He ran the wrong way. He ran right instead of left, and if he would have run the right way, LSU would probably be sitting here at 7-3 and potentially going to the Sugar Bowl with a win over A&M. So I don't know how his psyche is. That'll be something to gauge in this game, because he's going to have to step up because, you know, again, the Fournette battling that injury.
Yeah, we were talking about what A&M's chances could be for the Sugar Bowl. Obviously, a win tomorrow night over LSU is needed for that. Even now, after the College Football Playoff Committee has put them out of the rankings, it's still going to be an uphill battle, even if they do pull out a win at home. And looking at this matchup, me and Travis were talking about it a little bit. We saw that we each had our own thing. Travis said, obviously, in the trenches, he thinks that's where the thing is going to be won. I said quarterback play would come down to a big one, because I know LSU doesn't lean incredibly on Danny Etling, but I think A&M's going into this thinking, look, Darius Geis, if Leonard Fournette does play, those guys are going to get their yards. But if we can somehow contain Danny Etling and keep him from burning us on a big play, then we might have this thing in the bag. What do you see from this game? What's a big matchup to you, and what do you think one team is going to have to do well over the other in order to get a win?
Well, you know, for LSU, you guys, as I mentioned earlier, the tackle positions are an extreme concern. And, you know, I think when you're going against a team like, you know, Myles Garrett, with Myles Garrett, you know, your outside on the offensive line really is an important piece. And LSU right now struggles there. I think that's a big matchup to watch. You know, KJ Malone, who is actually Carl Malone's son, he's one of LSU's left tackle. You got a rotating group at right tackle. Those guys, they're going to be pressured, and they're going to be tested like they probably haven't been, you know, all year. And so that's a big matchup to watch. Then, of course, you have LSU secondary against A&M's passing attack, and that's been something, you know, we've seen LSU get the better of the last few times they've met. Mm-hmm. That's kind of short passing game, and LSU really tends to shut that down with A&M. Can they do it again, you know, a fifth straight year? I don't know. But those are two matchups I'm looking at.
So in looking at some of the stats and the rankings here in the SEC, and looking at what has been troubled A&M, a lot of the defensive struggles have come from not being able to get off the field, especially on third down. A&M leads, or at least was second in the country coming into this last game with defensive snaps that they've faced. When looking at some of the things that LSU is ranked high on, they're ranked high on opponent third down conversions and penalties. Are those things that have hampered LSU at key moments through the season, or is that something that has they've been able to overcome some of those defensive miscues?
Yeah, they've mainly been able to overcome them. LSU's defense is certainly the strength of the team and has been for years, but this year with you know, first-year coordinator Dave Aranda running the show, it's really kind of incredible to watch his defense and how he schemes up stuff. And LSU's allowed, I think, 10 or 11 touchdowns in 10 games, the fewest in the nation. When the opponent gets into the red zone, they just put on the clamps and force a field goal. It seems like every time. So they're averaging giving up about one touchdown a game. So it's they've overcome a lot of the deficiencies with having really good athletes, especially a guy like Arden Key coming off the edge, and guys in the secondary that pretty much all were at 1.5 star rated kids out of high school, and they've been able to shut down opponents despite some woes at other areas. But this week, a little different. You're missing your key guy in the middle, Kendall Beckwith. He won't play after injuring his knee, and so that's going to be something to really watch. How LSU will fare without Beckwith in the middle.
And that's huge news too. I know for that defensive the defense that for LSU bringing in, as you talked about, one of the better ones in the nation. And for Ed Orgeron, how are the players reacted? I know it seems like his players just love him. After that loss last week, I know things look probably pretty slim for him to stay in Baton Rouge, but have the players been asked about that at all, what they think his future is, or if they would like him back? How have they reacted following that close loss?
Yeah, they do. They're sticking up for the coach. They certainly want LSU to hire Orgeron. Most of them that we talked to after the Florida game just came out and said it. Ethan Posick said, They need to hire him. They need to give him an extension. So I think a lot of players feel the same way. They feel like Ed is a guy they love as a player's coach, and they believe that the energy that he's brought to the team after Les was fired. Right now they're 4-2 with two very close losses, 10-0 Alabama, 16-10 at home to Florida. They feel like he's the guy, and I think a lot of them are going to be playing for him this week.
And a big thanks to Ross Dellinger, the Baton Rouge Advocate, for joining us and talking a little LSU football. Ross, thanks so much for your time. Really do appreciate it. You going to be coming in on tomorrow?
Yeah, well, we're staying in Houston Wednesday night, and I'll be coming in Thursday for the game.
Oh, fantastic. Look forward to seeing you up at the press box.
All right, thanks, y'all.
All right, thanks, Ross. Really do appreciate it. Again, big thanks to Ross Dellinger for joining us on the line. And coming up next, we're going to be talking with Jerod Johnson, Texas A&M quarterback, going to be joining us on the line talking Aggie football. Again, you're listening to my Aggie Nation podcast. Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Zach Taylor alongside Travis Brown. And joining us on the line, a very special guest, Texas A&M, former quarterback for Texas A&M, Jerod Johnson. And Jerod, thanks so much, man. We really do appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. I know that you're doing a lot of stuff down there in Houston. And why don't you tell us a little bit about that, because it's a lot of good things going down there.
Yeah, I've been helping out coach at St. Thomas High School in Houston, and I have my quarterback training business, the Quarterback Club of Houston, where I train some of the top youth and all from second graders up to college guys and pro guys getting ready for the combine. So just doing that and doing a little TV and radio for 610 and the Cube, and also doing some stuff with Nike, traveling, doing some quarterback coaching as well. So I got a lot going on, keeping me busy, but it's been good.
Now, I talked to you at the Huff Hines discussion up here at Texas A&M a couple weeks ago, and you had a great little presentation put together for some of the students here, kind of about your battles with injury and just kind of your career looking back on it and how it's brought you to where you are here today. I know we don't have the time for that whole great presentation that you gave, but give a little, if you could, a little bit of the kind of the Reader's Digest version of as you look back on your career and kind of, again, how it's brought you to where you are today.
Yeah, I mean, as I look back to where I am now, it just is one of those things to where growing up, I played a lot of baseball and I was never taught properly how to throw the ball. I had a lot of success from being around the game and I mean big and strong and being athletic, and so the way that I threw the ball put a lot of stress on my shoulder, which caused my shoulder essentially to get hurt, and by the time I realized that's what caused it, I didn't really have the necessary resources to try to correct it in the right amount of time. And so with that being said, it kind of caused me on this kind of crusade or search to try to find the proper way to throw the ball. And that led me to getting those answers, and then at that point then trying to make my shot or my run at the NFL, which kind of bounced me around. But from a coaching standpoint, playing for the six NFL teams and a couple of Canadians and the Canadian team and other teams, giving me a base of knowledge from a coaching standpoint and a bunch of perspectives on how to do the same thing, that is my base for me as a coach now to share that information with the next generation. So in a nutshell, that's essentially what it was.
Definitely. And you talked a lot about, too, about kids. You don't want to let a kid go through a situation where he might have questions about quarterbacking or questions about an injury or just kind of life decisions involving sport. And I believe that you kind of said that's kind of your calling, is to make sure that there's someone that is available to them to give them the answers that they're looking for.
Yeah, I just think in this day and age, the amount of resources that are out there to help kids are so vast that if there's so many resources for questions going unanswered, if that makes sense. And so for me, I try to be a resource so somebody who has those questions or who doesn't have an answer can find them, so that they don't have to try to fend for themselves and figure out the answers when it's too late.
Gerard, and obviously coming in there, and you talked about playing baseball, and it seems like nowadays everything is so specialized as far as kids will play one sport and things like that. But how many students do you have that come in? You talked about learning technique kind of later on, like you did, coming back from injury and things like that. How many of those kind of kids do you come across, kids that might not know a whole lot about the quarterback position but are learning so much underneath you?
There's a lot of kids, you know, and so as much as I say the fact that me playing baseball, like it's one of the things that allowed me to have the success that I have, is my ability to throw. So I actually like kids who play multiple sports. I suggest it to all my clients to play as many sports as they can, because you can gain other things from other sports. I mean, hitting a game-winning free throw can help you throw a game-winning touchdown pass. You know, it's just about having the resources, though, that when you know how to switch up, you know, the specific sport. But I get a lot of kids. I mean, it varies as far as the kids who know everything about the position or some who know nothing. And for me, it's just trying to maximize each individual kid. And you'd be surprised how much a kid can learn pretty quickly if he has a base in another sport.
Yes, for sure. I think we would be remiss not to ask you a little bit, too, about the Texas A&M Aggies this year and kind of what you've seen from them. I know the past couple of weeks that you've had some changes in the offense with Jake Hubenick coming in. First off, what have you seen from Jake Hubenick as a quarterback instructor, from what he's been able to do for the Aggies over the past 2 weeks?
I think Jake has done some good things. I mean, the hardest part about the quarterback position is there's no way to simulate live reps, you know. And so for me, he's just been getting adjusted to things and kind of finding his way so he can feel more comfortable and confident making the tough throws you need to make to win games in the SEC. But one of the biggest things I've seen is the loss of the running option on the what I call run PO or RPO, the run pass option stuff, to where that whole aspect of our game has to change. You know, I mean, you look back to the Arkansas game and some other games, Trevor Knight's ability to score with his feet kept us in the game, you know. And so that option not being there, I think from a play calling standpoint, a team identity wise, they're going to have to find a new way to generate that offense. And so once they figure out how to do that with Jake, I think they'll be a lot better suited.
Sure. I think a lot of people want to jump in, and we've seen a lot of people on social media want to jump in and really kind of get on the offensive coordinators and the coaches for the play calling. But how difficult of a dance is it when you have a new quarterback coming in who is a different style of quarterback than the one that just got hurt, and trying to mid-season tailor a play calling and a schedule for a game like that when you're really working with a different style of quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, like it's one thing to design a play. I think Coach Mazzoni can do it. I mean, he's so good at, I mean, he's been doing it for so long. He can design something. It's another thing to be good at something. So if the majority of your offense has been built around the run pass option and the quarterback running and those things, you went all spring, training camp, and the year doing it, you can put in new plays. It's kind of a crapshoot in how well you execute those new plays in such a short time. So you can run them, but you got to be good at them at this point in the SEC. And so as people are frustrated, I'm sure there's a lot of things Coach Mazzoni want to do, but I think he has a good understanding of what they can do, and you don't want to put too much on the new quarterback. So it's not a perfect situation. Anytime you have to play your backup quarterback, it's not ideal. You know, I think they're doing the best of what they can do.
A big game coming up tomorrow night, Gerard, Texas A&M, LSU. What do you see from that matchup?
You know, I see two you know, tough teams. I think both teams have good defenses and cover pretty well. I think it's going to come down for defensively our ability to tackle. I mean, after the games that we've lost, it just, for me, you know, watching just our ability to tackle, it seems like guys in the right spot was just not finishing plays. You know, a 5-yard pass or running back can't turn it 20 yards. You know, and that's what's been hurting us. And offensively, you know, Christian Kirk has to make some plays. It's going to come down to contested throws. And can we create explosive plays? Because LSU's defense is too good to try to matriculate the ball 30-play drives. I think we're going to have, you know, 5 or 6 explosive plays to kind of shorten the field or flip the field to kind of give us a chance to win. So if we got to tackle on defense and we got to create some explosive plays through normal offense on offense to give us a chance to win.
Sure, and I think the other thing that a lot of people have kind of focused in on with this A&M team over the last couple of weeks is the offensive line. And again, just like we talked about with changing quarterbacks that have different run styles from the RPOs to more traditional pocket passer, what are you looking for in an offensive line? Or how does an offensive line also adjust to a different kind of quarterback like that? I think that's kind of been the key difference, or even a different play calling that's been the key difference in the offensive line over the past two weeks as well.
Well, what the RPOs can do is mask an offensive line, whether it's size or ability or whatever. When you run the option, when you run any type of option, with the linebacker has to read who has the ball, where did the ball go, it makes him a little more hesitant and allows the linemen to get to their blocks better because the linebackers have to read. On top of that, because of the option, you pick up an extra blocker, because you're leaving one guy to read. And then when you go make that block, all you have to do is cover someone up. You don't actually have to move them off the ball. So when you take away the option, and now you're asking guys to actually move people off the ball and actually move them from their spot and kind of reestablish the line of scrimmage, that makes things a lot tougher than the prior. You know, so I think it's going to take an adjustment from the offensive line as well in a run game standpoint. And on top of that, having a quarterback who can run around and make plays with his feet also saves him in the pass game. So going from a dual threat guy to more of a pocket passer type is just an adjustment for the whole offense. It's just unfortunate that adjustment's coming this late into the season.
Definitely. And finally, you had a lot of guys coming at you pretty hard when you were a quarterback here. In watching Myles Garrett, how does he kind of stack up with maybe some of the guys you played against or played with, or some of the other guys that you've watched in college football?
I mean, he's just such a natural athlete, you know, and so for me, I mean, he's your prototypical pass rusher, you know, and so as somebody like what made Vaughn so special, I can compare him to Vaughn, but there's nobody like Vaughn. What made Vaughn so special was he had an unorthodox way of rushing the passer. You know, like every time he comes at you, it's a different movement, and his ability to bend and gyrate and do things that other guys can't do is still what makes it so hard to block. I think Miles is a little more smoother of an athlete. I'm not going to say it makes him easier to block. It just makes him less unpredictable. But his fluidity is also what makes him so special. You know, he's such a fast and smooth and natural athlete that he's just generally going to be bigger, faster, stronger, and more athletic than the guys that are trying to block him. And so, I mean, I'd probably compare him to Vaughn, but just there are subtle differences in the fact that Vaughn has an unorthodox way of doing things that you'll probably never ever see again in the game of football. Mm-hmm.
So. And Gerard, right before we let you go, I got to ask, do you miss seeing Texas A&M and Texas play on Thanksgiving, having been a part of so many of those games?
I do. I mean, as a second generation Aggie and my dad played in those games and growing up watching it, I miss it. I think the state misses it, and I think we got to find a way to get it back. Whichever, either on our side or their side, we got to make it happen, and hopefully they can do that pretty soon.
Well, I knew how to ask you that, Gerard. Thank you so very much for your time, man. Really do appreciate it, and good luck with all the things you're doing down there in Houston.
Oh, thank you.
Gerard Johnson, former Texas A&M quarterback. Appreciate him coming on with us. Coming up next, we'll make some of our collegiate picks. You're listening to my Aggie Nation podcast. It is that time. The bestest time of the entire podcast. It's our college football pick'ems. We're going to be picking some big games this week, Travis.
Pick'em
with some big games. And by the way, we have a very special guest today. Did you know that the First Lady herself, Miss Reveille, is going to be joining us today? So good to see you, girl. So she's going to be joining us today. She's going to be making some picks today.
Oh, of course. Her birthday was yesterday.
Her third birthday was
third
yesterday.
Birthday, so
we're happy to have her here. And so, girl, I'm glad that you're here. And so we will ask you. Yeah. Hold on. We'll ask you some questions here in just a little bit. But first, let's go ahead and I guess I'll start. I guess I could start, right?
Sure.
We'll go ahead and start. And going over some of these games, we have some big ones this week. Obviously, we'll talk about Texas A&M and LSU because that
in and of itself, I guess, at least around College Station, is the biggest. We have Mississippi State at Ole Miss. It's the Egg Bowl down there, and that one's actually going to be in Oxford. So, Travis, what say you about the Egg Bowl this year?
Man, those Mississippi teams are just not really good, but they sure had their way with A&M this year. Having seen both of them, I think I gotta go with Ole Miss on this one. I mean, Mississippi State played their minds out against A&M in that game, and if they play like that, I think that they could sure give any team a run for their money. But I think Ole Miss is the better team. Question mark. It's been kind of weird to watch what they were able to do against A&M and try to compare them in this fashion. But yeah, I think give me Ole Miss.
Okay. Well, when I'm looking at this matchup too, overall, these teams have had bad years. And Ole Miss is coming off a bad loss to Vanderbilt. But I think they are going to be very, very pumped up for this game. I think it's going to be a big one. I think Ole Miss is going to probably run away with it. Just because, boy, Mississippi State has looked bad this year, except against the Aggies. And so we'll see. Now, Miss Rebley, what say you? Mississippi State or Ole Miss?
Well, naturally, that was Ole Miss.
Yeah, Ole Miss. Okay, so Rebley is picking Ole Miss as well. We have a three-way tie when it comes to that. So everybody's picking Ole Miss this week. Now, let's look at another game that we've got going on. It's Utah at Colorado, a Pac-12 showdown. Actually, these two teams are ranked in the top 25. Colorado ranked 9th. Utah ranked 22nd. It's going to be in Boulder, a 6:30 kickoff. Liable to be a little chilly there as well, even though the weather's saying it's 60 degrees. Travis, what say you?
Man, ride those Buffs. I think they're back. This is a big year. Give me Colorado. I mean, Colorado is a 10-point favorite in this game. Give me the Colorado in that one.
Colorado has been riding high for much of the year, and I do like me the Buffs. But that being said, Utah is coming off a very disappointing loss to Oregon at home. I think they are going to be more than ready for this ball game. I have got Utah. And then Miss Rev, what say you? Now, these are two close games, or these are two close teams, so there's a lot that's going on with this. Yeah? Okay. All right. She picked Utah, too?
No, she picked Colorado.
Oh, she picked Colorado. Well, sometimes... All right, I'm glad that you're here, because you're a good translator.
I'm a little bit more better at the dog interpretation. So, she definitely... she said that she had a cousin who lives up in Colorado who befriended a buffalo.
A buffalo.
And saved it from a raging river. So, it goes back to family ties on that one.
All right, so Rams got Colorado. You've got Colorado, Travis. I have Utah getting the upset on the road. Another game that we've got. This one is the Apple Cup up in Washington State. But, yeah, it's going to be Washington at Washington State. The Fighting Mike Leeches have been doing pretty good, but they suffered a loss last week to Colorado. Meanwhile, Washington is riding high under Chris Peterson. What do you think?
I think everyone thought that, at least A&M fans, when that weird week when A&M was ranked number 4 and Washington was ranked below them but undefeated, and everyone thought, well, both these teams are going to be undefeated at the end of the year, and this Apple Cup was just going to be, for that final playoff spot. Well, that doesn't really have the same luster as it once did. And, yes, Washington is ranked number 5. Wazoo is 23. But I just like what Mike Leach has been able to do with this team this year. Give me Wazoo and the upset.
So, Washington State going on the road, getting the upset. Well, not going on the road, I apologize. They're going to be at home, but getting the upset over much favored Washington. By the way, this is a pretty good matchup when you're talking about ranked teams. Number 5, Washington, and number 23, Washington State on Friday. And you know what? I'm looking at this matchup. I think Washington is just that good. I think that they're going to be able to go on the road. They won't have a problem with Mike Leach's offense. They've got a solid defense despite having a trip up against USC. So I think Washington is going to get the big win here. Now, Rev, what say you? Wait a minute. I didn't catch that. What was that? Okay. So, Reveille coming in. She says that Wazoo's going to get the upset.
Yeah. Her and Mike Leach go way back. They're pals.
Oh, so. Mike Leach is a very big lover of dogs, and especially loves Reveille and all things Texas A&M. So she has Washington State getting the upset as well.
Right, yes.
So we've got that game. Florida at Florida State. That one is down in Tallahassee. A couple of teams that are vying for some big bowl games. Of course, Florida coming off a very Very good win over LSU on the road. Meanwhile, Florida State is 8-3, by the way. Florida is 8-2, even though the Seminoles are ranked higher than the Gators at this point in time, 14 versus 15. But, Travis, what say you?
See, I think Florida's ranking is by nature of just a kind of outlying win against LSU last week. I think that if Florida would win this game, it would cause some really big shakeups and some interesting things for A&M's bowl future. But I think Florida State is going to win this one, so a little bit less anarchy in that frame of mind.
So you got Florida State winning at home against the Gators. You know, I'm looking at this. Is Luke Del Rio going to be healthy for this game? That was a big question, too, coming in. I just don't think, even with Luke Del Rio, I don't think Florida has the power on offense. I just don't think they've got the firepower for it. I think Florida State is going to be at home. Obviously, they're going to be rowdy in Tallahassee. I've got Florida State winning this one. And again,
Luke Del Rio is out.
Okay. And again, this is somewhat split on this decision, but I think I've got Florida State. Now, Rev, what about you? Okay, so a lengthy explanation there.
Naturally, she wants to do a favor for her buddy Lee Corso, who picked the Aggies earlier this year, and so she's going with Florida State.
Yeah, a Florida State alum as Lee Corso played there, so all three of us going with Florida State this week. Wow, we were really on the same track for the most part. Then this is a good one, TCU at Texas, and your alma mater, TCU, going up against the Horns. What do you think? This is down in Austin, by the way.
Yeah, man.
Got to factor that in.
ESPN has this one right at a split. Texas is a 3-point favorite. Man, I think those Texas players have everything to play for in this game with all the emotion that they showed with that last press conference with Charlie Strong and wanting to play for their coach. I think not only with this being a home game, there's going to be a lot of emotion on that Texas side, and I think they pull this one out.
You know, I'm looking at Texas, and there is so much in disarray down there, and it seems, at least it's coming off that way. I realize that the players are full support of Charlie Strong, but the administration, the way that everything has been handled, and coming off a loss to Kansas, yeah, Texas has everything to play for, but look, TCU is no spring chicken to this type of game. And Gary Patterson's a very good coach. I think he's one of the better coaches in the nation. And I think TCU is going to come in, and I think they are going to pull off the upset. I really do. I think that they're going to come in, and they're going to be able to get this win. Now, Rev, I understand that you're not a real big fan of Texas, but you think the Longhorns are probably going to get this, right? Okay. All right. She thinks that TCU is going to get the win. So, Rev has TCU getting the win on the road in Austin. Now, some other games. Let's go to the SEC again. Auburn at Alabama. It's the Iron Bowl. 13th-ranked Auburn Tigers at the top-ranked Alabama Crimson Tide. What do you think, Travis?
Yeah, I mean, this is Alabama all the way. I think that there could be a lot of style points gained in this game. Auburn is playing for the Sugar Bowl. And I think if they can keep this game close, they could probably solidify that spot in the Sugar Bowl with a good showing. So I think they have that to play for. But I think Alabama, of course, wins this one.
Travis has the Tide rolling at home. You know what? I do as well. I don't think that there is a way. Auburn might make this one close. They might surprise us, but they're not going to be able to pull off the miracle that they did a few years ago. So I think that Alabama is the one that's going to be taking this at home. Now, Miss Rev, what say ye? All right. That was,
Bama.
It was easy, so that was easy pick for her. I think that was an easy pick for a lot of us. Now, here's another one. Texas A&M against LSU.
No, we have one more before that.
Oh, my bad. Sorry. Michigan at Ohio State. I almost completely forgot that, as is everyone else in the nation.
But you're just forgetting that the Big Ten is the best conference in the nation.
I completely forgot about that.
Best conference in the nation. You're doing what the people are doing, Zach.
So second-ranked Ohio State at home against number 3 Michigan. This is a big-time battle, always is. What do you think, Travis?
Ooh, yeah, I want to go with Michigan. I think that they have something going on there, but I think I have to go with Ohio State on this one. I think they're just a little bit of the better team, and I think that they have the edge. I'm going to go with Ohio State because it's a home game, but yeah, give me the Buckeyes.
Look, since Jim Harbaugh has returned to Michigan, it has been one thing after another in Ann Arbor, and they have really got the ball rolling. I remember the day he was hired, Texas A&M was about to play in the Liberty Bowl. That's how fast he's turned this thing around. And I think Michigan is going to come in there. I think they're going to pull out this thing off. I think Michigan is going to get the upset. As sexy as Urban Meyer and Ohio State, the Buckeyes, all of it are, I still think that Jim Harbaugh just has that it factor. I think he's going
to
go in.
So what you're trying to say is you think the dad bod is sexy.
Yeah, and the pleats are too. Okay. And I think he's going to get it done with his clipboard and everything else,
there
his Sharpie
go.
That he's got
there
going
go.
On. Now, Miss Ref, this is a big game. Not as big as the one in College Station, but this still is a pretty big game. What do you think? Okay, so she thinks it's going to be close, but she thinks Ohio State's going to get the win.
Yeah, that's what I got out of that too.
So she says that, look, Jim Harbaugh, he's a cool guy. Mm-hmm. She likes him. He's petted her before,
mm-hmm.
but she still thinks that Ohio State's probably going to end up rolling in this one.
Right.
Last but not least, let us go to the big time game. This is LSU at A&M. Neither one of these teams is ranked any longer in the college football playoff. Travis, what do you think?
You know, I was leaning one way, and then actually listening to Ross talk about some of the offensive line struggles kind of made me want to lean back another way. LSU's offensive line struggles, but I just don't think the Aggies have this one in them. I think that there's still a lot of big bowl implications that come from this game, so I'm going to go with the Tigers in this one.
Oh, yeah. She's not real happy about that. Okay. So Travis has LSU going. You know what? When you're looking at this all the way around, obviously Texas A&M has suffered a lot of struggles, especially on offensive late. LSU struggles offensively. Granted, the running game is very good, but Leonard Fournette hasn't been there, and Darian Geis is pretty dang good, but A&M is going to be set for them. I think A&M is going to be looking at this as, we got to stop the run somehow, we got to contain it, but if we keep Danny Etling doing Danny Etling things, which is kind of meh, then they think that they can get the win, especially on defense. And you also have Priest Willis coming back. So I have the Aggies winning this one, and some people might think this is a little bit of an upset, but I think Texas A&M might pull this one out. Now, Miss Rev, I know that we probably shouldn't even ask, but who have you got? Okay, she said A&M?
Yeah, no.
She said A&M.
No description needed,
yeah,
just said
A&M. I didn't expect anything different, I got to tell you. But girl, we really do appreciate you coming in, taking time out of your very busy schedule to come and talk to us.
As Zach
and
actually looking down at the ground right now.
Yeah. Well, she's down there.
Oh, right, that's where she is.
And so coming and taking your valuable time out of your day, very busy schedule, naps and sorts of things, and going to class. To come and talk with us and make some picks.
Yep. Thanks, Rev. Well, that'll do it for the My Aggie Nation podcast this week. Big thanks to Ross Dellinger, the Advocate, for breaking down some LSU, and Gerard Johnson for coming in here and talking about some Aggies and some work he's doing. And, of course, Miss Rev coming in here to pick some games for us. It's LSU, A&M this weekend, and then it's bowl season. We got bowl practice and bowls coming after that, but go eat your turkey, and then go watch some football this Thursday as Texas A&M takes on LSU here in College Station. For Zach Taylor, I'm Travis Brown. Thanks for listening to My Aggie Nation podcast. We'll talk to you next week. It seems like every day, everything just has a way, the way it must have seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't easy, a girl, we know that's true. If we want to keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. Don't want to make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. Don't want to make sure that we